You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Tuesday, it is populated by one Greg Davies, the head of wealth at Kratos Capital, and also David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, based in the salubrious surroundings of Melrose Arch in Johannesburg. David, you were saying that there was a really big big spike in volume at the close today. Well, what was that all about?
Well, apparently the MSCI reweighting, I think Greg's got a lot more details about it. But to give you an idea what went through right at the end, you know, I always take a reading at 10 to 5 before the closing auction. And then I take one afterwards. So we were 15 billion at 10 to 5. And the latest is 26 billion. So 11 billion rands worth of stock went through in the last few minutes. And to give you an idea of what this means or how it changes things, NASPAS was 17.8% of the market. It closes off now at 22% of the market. So massive. I think about, I make almost double the value of NASPAS went through at the end, 2.6 up to 5.8. So a lot of stuff there. But Greg, you've got more details about what it means to the weighting and also some of the stocks, because I picked up a few, but I'll give you, you know, just give you some time first. We'll discuss it as it goes along.
Off you go, Greg.
Yeah, so it's the note which I received was saying a MSCI, that's Morgan Stanley Worldwide Index. In the closing auction today, SA's weight in the MSCI goes from 5.59 to 5.73. They're estimating $476 million worth of net outflows. The biggest outflows, Old Mutual, NASPAS, as Dave was saying, Remco, Fortress A, Growthpoint, Redefine, RMI, and Sunlum is the only inflow. So I think that accounts for that massive spike in volume. I didn't realize we were only 15 going into the auction, so that's huge.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, what happens? Is this every month? Is it every quarter? How does it work? Because it seems as though that certain people in the know can profit from this kind of event.
Yes, you know, I think it's every quarter. And back in the day, what I used to always think is the big players used to position themselves and then leak it out on an email to me, and I'd send it to all my crew. And then we'd all be positioned incorrectly because they would be ahead of us. But this time they've kept it as very, very secretive. I've asked a few overseas brokers that normally send it to me, and they've been told it's not to be shared with people which aren't the clients of Morgan Stanley.
Oh, interesting. David, what is your view on this sort of thing? Because this wouldn't have happened on Diagonal Street 30 years ago.
No. You know, I'm not in the trading side of things. So from that point of view, it doesn't really affect me. The only thing that I picked up during the day, whether this was connected or not, was very heavy pressure on Old Mutual. You know, that seemed to be from the, morning, the one stock. They're down about 2.8%, and immediately one kind of associates it with the troubles taking place at Old Mutual. Still no CEO, still on holiday or on leave, and there's been no resolution between the board and Peter Moyer. So I just thought it might be a little bit of mischief there. One other stock, Greg, I don't know whether this is in or not, is MultiChoice came under a lot of pressure today. ShopRite, a lot of pressure. So now, why I bring these up, I'm not sure whether they are connected in any way with some selling or whether there's something further to read into the weakness that we saw there.
Well, it might be, because obviously MultiChoice at some point was part of NASPAS, and if they were selling NASPAS, they might have been selling. It's not on my list, which is very sort of brief. But this is the first time I've seen MultiChoice pull back. It's one which our traders have tried shorting many times and come unstuck. And if you look at the foreign trading statistics, it's very popular amongst foreign investors, MultiChoice. And you know, we've all got a bit of a dim view of DSTV and so on. But I think they're viewing it as sort of a Netflix of Africa. And that's why they hardly ever pull away on the bid. But 5.6% down on some quite big volume, that I think that is noteworthy.
Last time I was in South Africa, I watched, I was in an Airbnb or something, and I watched DSTV for the first time for a couple of years. And what struck me was that it has, I used to watch it just for sport and news and the occasional film here and there. But obviously the films you can get elsewhere. But it seems to me that it is very, very tuned into the demographics of South Africa and the rest of Africa. Yeah. And you have to say to yourself, well, if this is an underserved market, then this thing is actually a rather good investment proposition.
Yeah.
David.
Their problem, you know what happens? Their problem
spin your
is,
football on there.
Yeah. You know, funny enough, and I might have mentioned it on this program before, because I did have a chat once with the CEO, and, you know, he explained something, and think about this. He said, you know, the sports channels don't really bring in a lot. Now, Saturday afternoon, you've got a soccer move. I mean, you've got a couple of soccer matches, and that's it. The rest of the week, nobody watches, because they don't want to watch replays, and certainly in the off season, show, you know. So he said you've got to have shows that people watch every day, and he was talking about sitcoms and mainly local sitcoms, soapies. Yes. That's where the money's made, you know, and therefore you have to localize it to the territory in which you're trying to which you're trying to market into. So I think.
But that's what I'm saying, David. The point is that you and I watch football religiously, and I watch a bit of cricket as well when the football season goes into remission for a couple of months. But the real population of South Africa watches programs that we don't understand, and that is the market. Yeah. So well done to MultiChoice.
Yeah. They need money to do that, and I think that's going to be their strategy, which is, incidentally, the same strategy as Netflix. You know, Netflix is
producing their own content.
If you go onto Netflix now, you will find French sitcoms or French movies, Russian movies. You find a huge amount of content that you would never ever see before.
Hmm.
If you enjoy reading subtitles, that's it. You know, you can't just doze off anymore.
Lindsay needs his glasses.
Yeah.
Well, hello. I've seen pictures of you at your desk, Greg, with binoculars on that make my glasses look stupid. Greg?
Glad you don't make any errors yet.
I can't go to the cinema anymore. I love watching French films and Italian films, etc. But if I go to the cinema now and it's an 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock showing in the evening and those subtitles come up, I'm asleep within 27 minutes.
Also, you can't watch the market and watch the movie at the same time. With your phone in the one hand, if you can't read the subtitles, it becomes very difficult.
Imperial Logistics, David Shapiro, why on earth is this thing up 10%? Come on now.
I looked at the numbers. I think it might be in the prospect statement in which they said that they're looking for low double-digit growth of continuing operations. So I would imagine it's there. Because if you look through it, a lot of the profits were around, a lot of the losses were around restructuring. Their local, the last year continuing HEPS were down 7%. So it seems to be a turnaround. I found 9% turning around on that a little excessive.
Some people aren't maybe caught short that his results weren't as bad as people were expecting. And that's, as you say, it's cost cutting. I think they're saying $385 million that's saved for next year in terms of sorting out logistics and so on. So maybe that's what the market's seeing, or maybe the market is expecting a bad number. It was as the afternoon dragged on. You suddenly thought, well, are these buyers going to carry on? They didn't pull away.
Greg, you know, if you look at the chart in Imperial Logistics, I mean, it's been an absolutely awful journey up to now. And possibly, as you say, it could be short covering, people saying, okay, not a bad result, enough done. Let's cover it. And because, I mean, if you look at it, it hasn't exactly been a runaway story, and from the heights that we saw before it split to where it is now, a really awful result. We saw something like that in Supergroup as well, turned around after a rather difficult situation yesterday. I couldn't open. You're now getting the shortened versions on SENS.
The short form, so yes. The short form announcements, and, yeah. I love it.
Which is great, but what it does do is it refers you to links you to the main site. The only trouble is I tried to get a Supergroup yesterday and I got the wheel of death, you know, that thing that goes round and round and round.
Might have found is all round. Of my traders were trying to get on the same web page at the same time.
I think so. And at the end of the day, I couldn't read it, you know. There was, God, anyway. So I just gave up. I said, okay, the shares are up. seemed to be a fairly good result. That's it.
You're handling people's money and you say, well, I've given up. The share's gone up and must have been a good result. Obviously a very, very assiduous fund manager.
This program exposes just how useless we are.
Yes. Well, anyway, I won't say a word, otherwise I'll burn my bridges. Tell me something about this. Renet Investments announces conclusion of its share buyback program. How important is that? Mm. Because the share price fell 2.6% today or something like that. When they say we're not buying back our shares, what does that mean? Does that mean that suddenly it's a free hit to the downside? Give me your assessment of this.
I think so. I think, there's they've been there persistently. So you have them on the market every day just mopping up or just contributing to the buying side of it. And once it's out the way, it does leave it open to be sold down.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the BTI, the British American Tobacco, which is its main holding, came down to 10 Rand at the end of the day, down about 1.2%. Mm-hmm. So off recent, that's Lindsay's number one short, in fact, off recent highs of around 5.
No, Dischem is my number one short, actually. But
BTI is your number two.
As a sideline there, the big deal at the moment in America is the tie-up between Philip Morris and Altria. And it's it literally came in the last hour, the confirmation.
I think that's what put BTI under pressure. Funny, when that story first broke, BTI had a little rally into the late 550s. And then as the afternoon drags on, people took a different view and sold the share down 10 Rand for the day.
But that's odd. So Philip Morris actually dropped about 7%. Altria is up 7%. Altria is, I think still owns a big chunk of ABN Bev. Was it the other way around? this is, I don't know. I don't know too much about where their strategies are heading as a non-smoker, but, it does seem to be, it seems to be going through, and it's all around the different markets in which they're represented, and also the modern, what smoking is today. It's it's Altria's. Who's Altria? Mm. Altria's got Juul, and which is the vapes. And I heard that, the kids doing vaping now at 12 and 13. My wife just came back from Australia, and she was talking to an old friend of hers who was complaining that her son of 13 just vapes at school.
let me tell you something. I mean, I occasionally go to England, and I go and stay in a village in Suffolk near Ipswich, which is obviously my favourite football team after Barcelona. And in a village in Suffolk, which is a very rural area, there is a place called a Vaporium. And it serves coffees and smart drinks and that sort of thing. But it has this vast range of flavors and things for people to, Greg, you would know better than me, to vape with.
Yeah.
And there are people standing outside at 9 o'clock in the morning waiting for the thing to open. It's incredibly popular.
The vaping actually makes smoking a lot easier. So I've got one which I keep in my drawer. Whenever Ronnie Clippin's not looking my way, I quickly have a vape.
And you say, never smoke.
Greg, what's that smoke? And I said, no, I'm just putting vaping. A cigarette out.
But Greg, you've never been a smoker, so why are you vaping now?
You see, the problem with smoking is obviously it's not the tobacco. Tobacco, the nicotine really doesn't harm you. It's the same as caffeine. But what's always harmed you is the burning, the smoke, obviously going in. Now they're heating the oil and tobacco just to the point where it's vaporizing and you breathe that in. So there's no actual ignition really.
Yeah, right.
It's battery operated. I charge it on my laptop, funny enough. And I think Philip Morris have got a sort of a jump in terms of the technology ahead of with the BTI products. And I think that's why BTI has been under pressure.
Yeah,
it's going to nothing. It's going to go. It'll be 150 rand a share within 2-3 years. So stay short of British American Tobacco. Let's have a look at DRD Gold Limited. Greg, going through the SENS announcements. Not a bad number. The share price was up a couple of percent at one point, but more or less flat on the day now. DRD Gold, Greg Davies.
Yes, I mean, I think we did speak on the shadow yesterday, and it did actually have a very strong day yesterday, which perhaps in anticipating this good trading statement. But these days, especially with these gold shares, it's always you've got to look forward, really. So I'm just having a look at the gold price now in I think, London or New York. It's trading at $15.40. It's suddenly up $13. So these trading updates are very quickly forgotten. There's actually one from Sabania when people's attention is then placed on the underlying commodity prices.
Well, look, gold is very hot at the moment. I mean, media talking it up, headlines talking it up, traders talking it up. And it's becoming the vape of the moment, so flavor of the moment. So people, you know, you can expect gold to go up as concerns about the trade wars continue. There are a lot of issues in the market at the moment that are making people nervous, which gives an ideal background for gold to go up. As Lindsay knows, I'm not the wildest gold bull, but I do recognize when a market's in an uptrend, and, you know, seen that this has got a little more to grow. And then you've got clients phoning us up, you know, wanting
saying,
us to get rid of...
haven't you got
exactly. Well, even on the offshore side, you know, on the offshore, because most of our portfolios are offshore, you know, sell ABC or sell, you know, whatever, and please buy me some gold shares in that. And you say, oh, this could be the end because the run is gone. You know, as soon as everybody comes out, the woodwork.
I'm hearing there's a massive option structure at around about $15.50 US dollars an ounce, and that may catapult the share price $10, $15, $20 immediately, if indeed it does break $15.50. But let's not talk about that because that's just pure speculation. Greg, you're long of Avenge, and it came out with a trading statement, and it's 2 cents.
Are you joking?
2 cents for sure.
Look, sorry, Greg. For my sins. I just thought in it down at sort of the price we. I bought, which is still
6 cents.
It's trading now. I thought, you know, how far wrong can you go? And once again, the market showed me quite a poor trading statement. We will have the full results tomorrow, which I mean, the losses are just unbelievably big. And I mean, it's one of those shares where there's so many shares on the offer at 3 cents, somewhere in the 590 million shares.
Are you seriously talking about a 3 cent share now?
No, it was a 6 cent share when he bought it.
But I mean, do you know, David? I'm sure you jog past that giant building which is going up in. So that's a winning building, it, and their shares are 3 cents. It's just mind-boggling.
It's tragic. I'm not. I just find. I see Wilson Bailey also been under a bit of pressure recently, but I think that it's absolutely tragic what's happened to the construction segment and Avenge, which came out of the AngloVol stable. LTA, remember, it had some really superb subsidiaries within it or operations within it, you know, to see where it is today and the trouble that it's in. And to a large extent, it's a reflection of the economy and also the lack of government spending. But, you know, the skills that they had bought up, that they had developed, just to see it trading at these kind of levels is so sad.
I think it was one of the shares which got a fine, you know, for this collusion for these stadiums, which, you know, it's almost like a free dividend for the government, really. Those stadiums obviously had to be built on time. I would argue that they were strategic. If they weren't ready in time, you know, you would have had to collude to get them ready. But some short-sighted people there gave them a huge fine, and look where we are now.
David, this is where I test Greg on his knowledge of companies listed on the JSE Securities Exchange. The company's name is Advanced Health, Greg. It came out of the trading statement. Advanced Health.
Okay, I've got at least one client that does own this one, so I've got the share code at least. It's close today at 45 cents, unchanged.
Yes.
There was a trading statement today, around about 3:30 today. The company expects a loss per share of 15.5 cents and a headline loss per share of 10.84 cents. It has been sort of since its listing been under quite a bit of pressure. It's been an underperformer, a market cap of 130 million rand odd. So quite a small player in that space. I wonder if they also not come under pressure from this NHI story that runs in the background.
One of the reasons that David Shapiro doesn't like the resources stocks, Greg, is because of the complicated nature of certain resources stocks. And Sabania came out with the trading update today, and it says here, shareholders are advised that the Sibanye Stillwater Group expects to report an attributable loss of 265 million rand or 19 million US dollars for the first half of 2019, compared with an attributable profit of 77 million or 6 million US dollars for the 6 months ended 30th of June 2018. And it goes on here to say, significant factors impacting negatively on the first half of 2019 results included, and this is where David Shapiro has to come in, deferral of of revenue from the Rustenburg operations due to the transition from purchase of concentrate to a toll processing arrangement. Number two, recognition of a fair value
deferral
loss on the US
revenue, yeah. Yeah,
on the US convertible bonds of $553 million, due to the bonds trading well above par value following the significant increase in the Sibanye-Stillwater share price. Non-recurring items including restructuring costs from the SA Gold operation, etc. Strike costs, increase in mining tax. I mean, how do you two actually make a living?
Yeah.
David?
You know, it's very difficult. I think these are mining operations. The deferral means that in the past they used to just purchase the concentrate and then sell it, and now they're doing it on an arrangement where they do it for you and they charge you a toll. So there's a slight deferral in the way that the cash flows. But I don't know how significant that is. But I think that, you know, when you go through numbers, I mean, it can be extremely difficult to understand it unless you have made a living out of
analyzing.
And you understand these terms. It's very, very difficult, particularly when they come out. This is a pure trading statement. It's put through by the accountants or there or management, but they have very little regard for people like us who have to interpret it and decide where we position themselves, you know, where we position ourselves on it.
It'll have full results on Thursday. And this is actually the second trading statement that's given.
Yeah.
It took me a little by surprise. I was just thinking, well, we'll make it till Thursday and then have the numbers there. But again, as I was saying with Durban Deep, one of the situations, the share was trading around sort of 20 Rand and 10 cents. And then the trading update came and it held. And then just before the auction, they knocked it down to 1976. But obviously, I'm watching the price in the U.S. all the time as well, which is quite ahead of our price here. And since the market's closed outside, the gold price has gone up, I think we're saying 1541 right now. So Banya in America right now is trading at 20 Rand 38. So that trading update caused a ripple through the share price here for the last few minutes. But by tomorrow, it could probably all be forgotten. And you can tell which ones I'm long.
Yes, you're an open book, Greg. Let's have a look at what's happening on the markets at the moment. I'll give you the spot prices in a second. Let me just get it up on share. Incidentally, the S&P is down 6 2/3 points at the moment, but let me give you the currencies, the all-important dollar rand and gold price, etc. Dollar rand is 15.35. British pound against the rand is 18.86, euro rand is 17.03, and the euro dollar 110.90, slightly stronger US dollar, slightly weaker euro. Let's go down to the gold price. Greg, as you're quite rightly saying earlier on, $15.41 now, up $13 per ounce. The platinum price is $863.50, which is up $7 an ounce. And palladium, Greg, over to you.
Palladium up $3 now, trading at $14.84.
Brent crude in London, 59.09, up 23 cents per barrel. In the United States of America, the Dow Jones is down 44 points, I think it is. S&P is down just 0.2% and 0.3% down on the NASDAQ. David Shapiro, what did you make of what happened over the weekend, the G7 meeting?
We were talking about it yesterday. It's quite remarkable. And I'm not quite sure what the truth is, because yesterday morning in the press conference, Donald Trump came out and said that the China wanted to make a deal, badly wanted to make a deal, and that they were talking, and China came out and said, you know, there was no such thing.
Exactly.
You know, there weren't these talks, and it might have been just some inquiries by some lower person asking some technical issues, etc. But I think what does come about, I think there's a slightly better tone coming out of Trump, which has given the market some comfort that somewhere along the line they might meet. But also, even Rouhani, which is the Iranian president, has come back and said, listen, until you lift sanctions, we're not going to talk. And he made some comment about a photo shoot. You know, he says, if you want a photo shoot, you can Photoshop a picture of me sitting next to you, kind of thing, you know, $2. Listen, he did make overtures towards him. This is Trump to the president of Iran. But I think overall there was a better tone, although markets just seem to be drifting sideways now without any real news to give a look. Fundamental news. Generally, the news coming out has been reasonably positive. Consumer confidence numbers, some manufacturing numbers in the U.S. But I don't know. We're just going into a messy period where it's so hard to put all these things together and decide where you are, you know, where you stand.
I think with that gold price ticking up there, it's almost like a fear gauge, the gold price. You see it going up $10 and then you reach for your phone to see what Mr. Trump's latest is. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Trump over the weekend, I mean, the two things that I took out of the meeting was that, first of all, he didn't turn up for the climate change symposium, forum. There was a great big chair there. Obviously, he needs a bigger chair than most people because he's fat. But it was he was a glaring omission. That's the first thing. And despite the fact that he calls himself an environmentalist. So he didn't turn up, obviously having a sleep or something. And the other thing was that he was giving his speech, and he, one of his speeches, and he said to everybody that Kim Jong-un is in charge of a country that has great potential, and maybe it does. But then he says, and Melania agrees with me. She also thinks this. And Melania Trump has never, ever met. I mean, they proved it on CNN, my favorite channel. They proved that she's never met Kim Jong-un. She doesn't know what's going on there. I mean,
she must have said to him, love you, you hardly ever speak about me. Is there any way you can just drop my name in occasionally? And say, don't worry, lovey, I'll organize something.
I'm not sure. I think she's had so much Botox that it's covered her ears and she can't hear anymore. And the other thing, of course, he said was that the trade team had been speaking to Beijing about the trade wars. And, of course, the Chinese said, I don't know what you're talking about. So, again, a litany of lies, David Shapiro.
Mm. Well, no one knows how to read him. He's almost unplayable. And the problem is that you cannot look at fundamentals anymore and decide which, where to position yourself, unless you really stand back from the noise, turn off the TV, and decide this is a good company, they make a good product, regardless of where we are, we're going to go ahead. But I mean, from a day-to-day position, I think for any person handling a lot of money, it must be hell to decide, you know, where you are. So it's a trader's market. It's like playing a board game where you draw out a card, which is Trump's latest tweet, and you either advance a few paces or you go back a few paces.
Well, Greg Davies, give us the JSE closing indices, please.
Thanks. Down 1.16%. Financials down 0.54%. Industrials down 0.19%. The retailers up a third. Gold Index actually was negative, so the gold price only moved after the close. Gold Index down 0.43%. That's the platinum's up slightly, resources up 0.56, the oil share up 0.16, 84 points better, which after being negative most of the day, I think most of us would have taken 53,896 on the oil share. I've got the volume of 26.8 billion.
26.8,
Not bad. That's obviously MSCI.
Funny enough, related. It did close, Greg. It did close higher at up 0.16. From where I measured it before the auction at 0.09. So, the closing auction was an adjustment upwards.
Yeah. And I think the volume's picked up since we've been chatting as well.
Yeah, 26.8, yeah.
Your shock of the day, please, David Shapiro. Do you have a shock of the day?
Cecil's picking up a little bit of steam. I don't say it's a wonderful buy, but I mean, I think after what we've gone through, it seems to be finding some kind of support, even though the numbers that we're reading are really awful. And I see Discovery also finding some kind of calm after a long time. But the one that worries me is ShopRite. Really, Lindsay, just keeps going down and down and down. And today, down another 3.25%. So really heading, I don't know where it's heading. I haven't seen it under this much pressure for a huge amount of time. And it points to results, and it points to management as well.
Yeah, Greg and I were talking about that, and we said that there's something going on there because it doesn't fall to a five-year low after results of 126 rand per share, then goes to 111. Yeah. Where did it close today, Greg?
Yes, it closed at 110.43 rand. That's another 3.2% down. Yeah. So, I mean, even when the trading update came out, it was trading at 145 rand. It had a terrific couple of hours, and it rocketed into the 160s. Mm. So by the time the full results came out, it was hovering around 140. they actually didn't look that bad. But I think it was after the presentation, the analysts that really understand the retail side came away a little disappointed, and that brought some selling, and it's just been relentless since that day.
We've gone back 5-6 years, even longer than that. I've got a 5-year chart, and it's way, way below anything we've seen over the
126.11 was the 5-year low, and it's now, as you say, 15, 16 rand below that. This is something quite serious, I think.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, I don't know what it's pointing to, but it's just heading in one direction. As my sergeant used to say, one straight strike.
And
speaking
about Sergeant Squigg, he went to a military reunion this weekend. How was that?
Yeah, every year, in the last weekend of August, then I was at a unit called 6-1 MEC. It was based in right in the northern part of Namibia, but spent most of the time slightly north of that. So just nice to see the guys, and saw my old sergeant major, and I can't say that what he calls me, but he still calls me the same nickname after 30 years.
Very good.
Well, I was in the Air Force. I was a Voorraadsman, which is a storeman. I did nothing but play soccer for 9 months.
Wonderful.
Okay, and my final note here, I don't know what I'm going to call it, Lindsay's Leaks.
You know where I've
like
got
that.
The
here
price?
We go.
2009.
Really? Wow.
2009.
So
yeah.
It's a 10-year low.
Sorry, that's a dollar. That's the dollar price I'm going to give you. That's the local price. Apologies for that. It's the last time we saw this was in September 2011.
So, wow.
We've gone back, yeah.
Eight-year low.
Back to the future.
8-year low.
Yeah.
Not good. Anyway, my final note here is, and I want both of you to comment upon it briefly, is Brexit latest, it says. Brexit latest, like Brexit has suddenly come into the investment and public consciousness. Boris Johnson to urge Jean-Claude Juncker to reopen Brexit talks. The PM will argue for fresh negotiations. It's been going on for 3 years now. When are these people going to grow up? David, you love this.
I don't know if anything's going to come out of it. I was reading the press and everybody seemed to be quite positive on the way that Boris Johnson conducted himself, not in the Brexit negotiations, but in everything else. But I must point out that over the last couple of days, Intu has found deep support. It was up another 8% in the UK today. I see Hammerson up to 2% in the UK, and I think Capital & Counties up about 1.5%. So there has been some kind of a turnaround in those stocks which have been absolutely hammered. But I can't read this. I can't read where this is going. They all kissed, they hugged, and Boris is quite oafish in the way that he conducts himself. He's he's like a little gnome that's walking around flapping his arms. But anyway, people seem to be quite
blunt.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. That was David Shapiro from Sasson Securities in the salubrious surroundings of Merrill's Arch, and Greg Davies in the slightly less salubrious surroundings of Ilovo, the head of wealth at Kratos Capital. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.